in the case of this rental house, this happens in real life. Somebody might think about a rental house and it's going to have a good cash flow. But oh my gosh, what if the tenant moves out? Does it suddenly become a liability then? And I love what you told me one time about that, Robert, when you said it's just a leak in a pipeline that needs to be fixed. As soon as it's rented again, it's cash flow building again.
Right. Vacancy is just an expense. It doesn't mean it's not an asset. It still can be made an asset. It's a leak at that time calling no tenant. So that's just an expense. And a lot of times people say, I don't want to buy real estate because they look at the vacancy factors. And vacancy factors are no tenant. It's really just an expense of doing business, which in real estate, in a good economy, is generally about 5% of the time your property will be vacant. So that's why you must adjust your income to make sure that it covers the vacancy factor. It's not a big deal. Or other people say, well, I don't want to fix toilets at night. Well, I don't like fixing them either. That's why you have a management company. So the point here is this, is many of the complaints that a person has about real estate, stocks, bonds, all these asset classes, those complaints actually keep them poor and keep them buying liabilities instead of assets. In other words, they see what's wrong instead of what's right about the asset class.
That's exactly true. And I love how you say that you pre-frame this or reframe it so that the fixing toilets, you just get a management company and you factor in the expense of that.
And the expense is a write-off. And the good thing about it is actually, if they fix the toilet well, it can actually improve your property, which includes this value.
Right.
And so the thing I'm pointing out here, again, the asset or liability is not the asset class. It's not the business, the real estate, or the stocks and bonds. Most of it is your education, your outlook upon wealth. And I've seen, the reason I bring this up is many people are negative to their own wealth. In other words, they would rather buy a new car than maybe buy a taxi, or they'd rather buy a bigger house than buy an apartment house. And is that attitude internally that determines if somebody's ultimately rich or poor or financially struggling like the middle classes?
That's a great point. And I want to one more time reiterate what the definitional rule is. If it puts money in your pocket, it's an asset. If it takes money out, it's a liability.
And one of the reasons I was able to retire young was that my poor dad always said to get a job. He was a school teacher, a PhD, head of education. Get a job, get a safe, secure job, which was mean working for earned income. And what my rich dad said was, don't do that. Acquire assets that throw off passive income or portfolio income, which is capital gains or dividends and things like this. So one of the reasons I was financially wealthy at a fairly young age is simply because I didn't work for the wrong kind of income. I worked for the right kind of income, which is acquiring assets.
That's a great, very well said. The other issue, I think we've talked about the assets and liabilities. The other point is income. People think, oh, my income went up because I got a raise at my job. Now, that's true, your income did go up, but you're getting very top-heavy in one type of income called earned income. And unfortunately, most people aren't even aware of the other two types of income, which are passive and portfolio. We're going to discuss that a little bit and the difference in those.
So when you look at an income statement and balance sheet, Diane, what do you look at when you're going to their workbook right now? When they look at the income statement and balance sheet, what are you looking for, or what should a person think is important?
Well, that's really well said. In fact, if you're not driving and you can open your booklet right now to the page that has my scorecard on it, you'll see that there's on the right-hand side examples of cash flow patterns. There's the poor, there's the middle class, and the rich. Now, those little diagrams show roughly what the cash flow patterns would be for someone in each of those classes. So if we're looking at the rich, which is the one in the bottom, we want to see lots of lines in that income, which means there might be a job, there might be a salary, but there's also definitely passive and portfolio. So we've got a lot of variety. It's well-rounded. There's much less risk because it's in balance on that income portion. And then look at the bottom part, the balance sheet. We see that the asset column is filled in. And there, in this example, there's no liabilities, but there could be some. But by far, the bulk of it is showing on the asset. And what that means is those assets shown there are what are feeding the other lines of income.
In other words, looking at the income statement, most people think that a high-paying job is the path to wealth. And unfortunately, that's not the way it is. The real path to wealth are the lines just below the income or the wage column, wage line in the income statement. So when I look at somebody's income statement and balance sheet, what I'm looking for is what kind of income they have and how heavily weighted to assets they are. If they have no passive income and no portfolio income, this person in their minds, they have what I would call probably middle class priorities. In other words, what they rather have are liabilities, i.e. the boat, the new TV, the vacations, and the vacation home, all things that are taking money out of their pocket. So they will have no income that's passive or portfolio in the income column. So it's very easy to see where a person is and where they're going unless their pattern changes.
That's exactly true. In fact, it's important to study those different patterns, because that's actually the third part of what's important about knowing where you are today. First, to reiterate this, you have to deal with it honestly. Second, need to understand the definition of the types of income and the types of assets and liabilities. And third, to then, when those numbers are filled in, to see what that pattern is. What story is are your numbers telling you? In fact, you'll see on the scorecard that there's that question, what story do your numbers tell, with some lines under that. When this is all done, please jot down a few thoughts. And Robert, I know you've done this a number of times in seminars with people, and people have kind of stood up and said the most remarkable things, because once they're honest and they see this, this is a mirror of what their financial life is.
Right, and when I've done this in seminars, what Diane is saying right here, this is where you are today, and if you keep doing what you're doing today, where will you wind up tomorrow? And most people find out the story they're running in their heads is that, you know, I went to school, I got a high-paying job, I have a big house, huge mortgage, nice cars, nice boat, and all this. And the story of their lives is a story of financial hardship and struggle. And that's what you call affluenza. In other words, they wake up in the middle of the night, they're really feeling terrible because they don't know how they're going to pay all those credit cards and bills off. So they have two choices or three choices, eat, drink, or go shopping, and then which makes the problem worse, and they get more addicted to that middle class syndrome because they never get out of it. And it simply comes because they take their income and they buy liabilities with it. And the poor person, you know, their story is, oh, I was born poor, I didn't go to school, my parents couldn't afford it, you know, and I was beaten and abused, and I'm going to be a poor person all my life. And if that's the story you're telling, then what you have is fundamentally income and expenses, no assets, no liabilities, and that's the script of their lives. So many times when I read an individual or a company's financial statement, I'm reading the story of their past, present, as well as their future, and their future will not change unless the numbers change or what they think is important changes.
Very well said. In fact, as you look at the patterns that are represented there, you'll see that the poor, there's no lines filled in the asset and liability. And that can be because they don't have the credit to go get credit cards. I mean, this guy might be the guy who's already declared bankruptcy once and is just sitting there trying to make ends meet. And it's always because of some other situation that's out of their control.
I'd like to say to the audience who's listening who's not heard my personal story is I've been broke. I've lost millions of dollars. So I really understand what it feels like to have to have all liabilities and no income and no expenses at some time. And by understanding financial literacy and having the gumption and the guts and the courage to just simply keep moving and keep filling out my income statement and balance sheet as the way I wanted it. In other words, instead of buying a big house, I started buying rental houses. Instead of buying a nice car, I bought stock. And I kept building up my asset column first before I bought the liabilities and before I worried about a high-paying job. The most important thing was to convert my income to assets as fast as I could, and that was my road to recovery. I'm saying this because many people say, well, I don't have money, it takes money to make money, or I don't have a good education. But I think what Diane and I are saying is they don't teach us in school anyway, so even the highly educated don't know this. And it's not about how much money you make, but simply where you put your emphasis is where you put your money.
Exactly. And it's the type of income, like we learned in the first tape with Jackie. She was working really hard. And I mean, this poor thing couldn't work any harder, but she was working hard at the wrong path.
And the reason for that is if you look under the expense column, the second column just below the income column, your number one expense is taxes. And many people say, well, income tax is my highest, you know, I'm paying out 50% income tax. Well, that's not all you're paying. You're paying income tax for everything else. You're paying taxes upon taxes. So taxes are your single highest expense. And you've got to be able to get in control with that. And one of the ways you get control of that is to get out of the E quadrant and get into the B quadrant or the S quadrant, because at that point you have some control over your number one expense, which is taxes.
That's great. The other cash flow patterns that we've seen, too, are the middle class. And as you look at the middle class, we'll see, again, probably job income. There might be a little passive. You could sometimes see that creeping in. And expenses and a whole bunch of liabilities. Now, what's happening is, say a person moves from poor to middle class, they start to get credit cards and they get credit again. So that's when they're buying the car on credit, the house on credit, and the stereo and the furniture and on. And that, by the way, is what wakes them up at night, that they can't sleep because they've got this debt load that they're carrying.
And unfortunately, what people do, let's say they're making a $2,000 a month and they get a pay raise to $2,500 a month, their emotional intelligence goes skew. They feel really good, so they go and buy a car on credit. And what they've now created is a long-term liability. They've increased their taxes. If you look at the income statement and balance sheet, and so their net income has actually gone down because instead of creating an asset, they created a long-term debt. And so that's why we talked about emotional intelligence before this, or delayed gratification. Unfortunately, what the middle class do is when they get ecstatic with extra money, they buy liabilities. And what the rich do with that extra money is they'll buy an asset, even though it means the asset may not pay off for 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Right. Now look at what the rich do. We see income and lots of lines there, and assets with lots of lines. The interesting thing is that there's no expenses. Now we know that the rich have expenses. How are they able to do that? And the answer is really simple. The business pays their expenses.
Or most of them as legally as possible.
Right, right, exactly. That's a good point. It doesn't pay all of them. But most of those, or a large portion of those expenses, can be legitimate business write-offs.
Pre-tax write-offs.
Right. Robert is emphasizing this point because it's very important. And this is something only a business owner can do.
And the reason you want to be move from the E or to the B or the E to the S is simply because you want to have more control, and the word is control, over your income and when you pay taxes. An employee, or a W-2 as we say in America, has absolutely no control over when they pay their taxes. In other words, what happens in America and many countries, the government gets their share of your income before you even get it, because they take it out in the payroll tax.
That's right. And tape 3, we're going to go even further into the expenses. And tape 4 is a very interesting capstone to this. After you start having success in your business, how can it begin to invest for you? And again, all of these are tax strategies that you can use personally, but you have to start with the first step, which is get a business.
And the second step is be honest about your financial statements. So what we recommend is in your spare time and when you have time to breathe a lot, fill out this income statement and balance sheet as accurately as possible and notice which pattern that you're in currently today and tell the truth about it. Be honest. You know, you don't have to show the government this. This is just for you to tell the truth of where you're at today. And then you may want to fill out another income statement and balance sheet for 5 years from today. So if today is not, let's say, the year 2000, then January 2000, then you want to say in January 2005, I want my balance sheet to look like this, income statement to look like this. And that's the next step, is taking control of where you're at and then where you want to go. And I think those are very important steps. And by being financially literate, as I say, you will take control of the types of income and the types of expenses you have.
Right. And then additionally, monitor your progress as you go. Personally, I do this at least every 6 months. I pull a full financial on myself. It's really exciting. It's a lot more fun than getting on the scales. But the point is that it's a measurement to see if I'm on the path.
And the progress you make, it's just like getting on the scales. It's actually reversed. If you're losing weight, you actually want to get on the scales more. But if you're gaining weight, you don't want to get on the scales. And I have found the more my assets increase and more my passive and portfolio income increase, the more I want to pull these financials. But if only my income is going up and my taxes are increasing, my expenses are increasing, and my debt is increasing, those are the kinds of people that don't want to take a look because it's too painful to look. So regardless of where you are today, I agree wholeheartedly with what Diane says. Be honest, fill this sheet out, where you are today and possibly where you want to be in 5 years. And that's a very good start.
Thank you for saying that. I think that's very important. Now I'd just like to give you some ideas for how to finish the rest of this. Set aside some time. This might take a couple of hours. You're going to see in the booklet the My Scorecard, and then following that are worksheets that will help you on each one of these four sections. There's instructions for each one of these categories that further explain what goes in which area. Job income is obviously salary. Under passive income, you're going to see the real estate net and business net. The word net means what is the value minus any payable. What's the mortgage payable? So example, real estate that you receive, this would be like a rental house. What is the cash flow you receive? How much gross do you get? What's the rent minus the payments, the property tax, the insurance, repairs?
For instance, if you have $1,000 rental income.
People say, well, my real estate gets me $1,000 a month because that's what the gross rental is. But no, we have to be honest and take the expenses off. And those aren't expenses that go down here on the expense column, because this is for your personal stuff. We're talking about passive income streams, so it's the net cash flow you receive. The same with the business. What is the net cash flow you receive from the business? So after you take the gross income and you pay all the expenses you need to from this business, how much can you draw off? Those are the two primary components of passive income. Portfolio income comes from a derivative of something else. For example, if you have held property and you've sold it, you're now carrying a note, which is called a derivative, because it is a piece of or a part of what was formerly the real estate.
Derivative comes from the word derive. In other words, orange juice is a derivative of the orange. So a mortgage is a derivative of real estate, and money is a derivative of something of the government, generally. So everything's a derivative of something else.
Right. Thank you for saying that. And by the way, when we use that example of the bank, this is where your mortgage payments go on the bank's income statement. This is the interest then that you're receiving off of a note that you hold. These are dividends. In other words, these are something that a stock you hold is paying. And then royalties. If you've had a book or a music or tapes or anything that gives you an income stream.
Or an invention, a patent on that somebody's paying you a royalty for.
An additional idea is oil and gas. They pay royalties. If you've been fortunate enough to be involved in some place that hits oil, you really know what this section is.
I love those royalty payments and dividends from oil companies.
Right. Those three components are what make up all your total income. And that's the number then at the final is, what is your total income? Passive plus salary plus portfolio. Now, the expense portion is the part that is for you personally. Your asset expenses, in other words, the rental property you own, the expenses associated with that would not go here.
What Diane's trying to say is that if I owned a single family home, a house, a 3-bedroom, 2-bath house, that piece of property is treated just like you would be treated. In other words, that piece of property will also have an income statement and balance sheet for itself. And that's what she's talking about. So every piece of property has an income statement and balance sheet, just as a taxi company has an income statement and balance sheet per taxi. And let's say a public company has income statements and balance sheet. The dividend they pay you is just the net, or the rental income is just the net, or the income from the taxi is just the net. But each asset class has its own income statement and balance sheet, as so should you have an income statement and balance sheet.
Thank you for saying that. And this section, expenses, is where your home mortgage is going to go then, and everything that you personally are paying. The next section is the assets. And again, using that hard and fast rule, if it puts money in your pocket, it's an asset. So we see your savings account, your CDs, stocks, bonds, receivables. This is somebody who's making payments to you. What's the balance on that note? Real estate. What is the true fair market value? Now, here's another place that I see people sometimes want to fudge is, what is truly the value if they were to sell a piece of property? That value minus what you would have to pay to sell it, so what are the commissions, etc., as well as the mortgage. That gives you what the net value of that real estate is.
The real value of your real estate, the price of it, is what's called a quick. In my business, is how fast can you sell it? So if you want to sell it in 1 month, what would that price be? If you're going to take a year, let's say the house is $100,000, but to sell it in 1 month, you'd have to mark it down to 90. That's its real value. In other words, how fast can you sell it at that price? To get the $100,000, you might have to wait a year to get that. So that's really not its value. So what's the quick sale price of that piece of real estate is the guide that I use. If I'm going to dump this thing tomorrow, that's the price I use on my asset column, just so I don't lie to myself. I could say, well, you know, it's worth 100, but if I wait 3 years, it might be 250. Well, we can dream on. But the reality is, what's its value if you're going to sell it within 30 days? And that's the price I put down there.
Great. The next one, too, is business value. Many people who've gotten this far have begun businesses. And what is the true value if they were to sell it? By the time you take that number and subtract what's due, the accounts payable, the notes payable, etc., sometimes that's a negative number. Well, be honest about that. That's what we're looking for. There's frequently, on the other hand, you can build a business that has a tremendous value. I just heard today about a company that sold to another software company for $200 million. That business value was pretty big on that balance sheet.
And the way they know that's the value is because somebody paid them for that. Until the moment somebody gives you the money, you really do not know its true value. Until that point, it's just a guess. It's a wild stab in the dark. So I would value your property and assets the way a bank would. A bank won't give you high market value. They'll always give you the lowest possible. So that's the best way to do it also. Same as if you go to a used car lot, you know, they'll say, well, my blue book on my car is $1,000. Well, they're still only going to give you $500 for it. So it's the $500 is the real value of that car, not the dream on factor.
Right. Thank you for saying that. And then the final category is liabilities. And again, just like expenses, these are your personal liabilities. These are your car loan, the mortgage, etc. The difference, and this gets back to a basic accounting principle, is the two top squares were income and expenses. That is the monthly payment you make. The asset and liability is what the balance in total is. So with the home mortgage, under the expense column, you're going to put your monthly payment there. Under the liability for your home mortgage, you're going to say, what's the balance due on this? So it might be $1,000 is what your payment is, that's an expense, and you owe $98,000. That goes under the liability column. It's very important to be honest about these. This is the other place that I see people fudge. Oh, I only owe $50,000. Well, they don't bother to really look, and because with a home mortgage, the first few years, all you're paying is interest. That balance isn't nearly down as far as people wish it were, and it's very easy just with a telephone call to find those numbers. So at least for the first time you do this, be as honest as you possibly can and get as much and as good a quality of numbers as you can, because this sets the stage for the path you want to build for the next 5 years.
And so the long-term objective, be it 5 years or 1 year or however long you want to take, is ultimately the objective is, as it is in my board game Cash Flow, as my rich dad taught me, is to have your passive income be greater than your personal expenses. So the reason my wife and I were able to retire was not necessarily because of any genius or anything like this. We simply have real estate and we have businesses and other investments, passive income and portfolio income, that is far greater than our living expenses. So the reason we don't have to work ever again is simply because passive income is greater than personal expenses. And that passive income comes from the asset column, not the liability column. So right now we recommend simply turn off this cassette, take a look at where I am today, my scorecard, fill it out, breathe hard, let whatever feelings come up, because I know when I filled it out when I was completely broke and deeply in debt, it was a very painful process. But by deep breathing, it sort of soothes the brain and you start looking at it. And then once you've calmed down, if that's what's required, then turn this tape back on and we'll conclude it for you. But until then, take a hard look at it, be honest, fill it out, look at it, be with it for a while. Understand this is just where you are. It doesn't mean who you're going to be tomorrow.
Now that you've had a chance to fill out the scorecard, what are the patterns that you see? Take a look at the right side where you saw cash flow patterns of the poor, of the middle class, and of the rich. Chances are yours is somewhere in between or has elements of them all. But take a look at that and see what that represents for your life that you've led so far with financial literacy. And then write down your thoughts on what story do your numbers tell.
Is this the story of a hard-working individual who has no assets, or is this the story of a future mega Bill Gates or something who's building empires and will have too much money in his or her lifetime? What is the story that you've told up to this moment, and then what story do you want to tell for tomorrow?
And above all, congratulate yourself. You've just done one of the hardest things a person can do, and you've gotten through it and you did it with honesty. And from here on, you can profoundly change the rest of your financial life.